Hi, I'm Frank Ferris, one of the principals of the Palliative Care Interdisciplinary Curriculum. I want to personally thank you for joining us for this module in our series on communications. I'm Frank Ferris and delighted to be able to spend the next little while with you talking about advanced care planning. I think it's a very important topic, and it's a new topic really, isn't it? I mean, it's not as though our society has been doing much advanced care planning. My goal is to say, why do we need this? And talk about some of the principles guiding decision making for us, so we really start to get into some of the principles of effective communication and how we make decisions. Talk about the what, when, how, and use, and I'm going to get you to develop your own advanced care plans as we go. So how many of you in the room like to plan? Everybody's a planner. No surprise, we're all healthcare workers, aren't we? And do you like control? You bet. Okay, sure. I bet that's true. And how do you like to have information to guide your decision making?
Straightforward
information?
Yes.
Do you like to know the facts?
As much as possible.
As much as possible?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. How do you feel if you don't have information to guide your decision making?
Nervous.
Sorry?
Unprepared.
Unprepared.
Nervous.
Nervous.
Indecisive.
That you may not come up with the best decision.
Maybe doesn't come up with the best decision. Absolutely. And how do you feel, you know I'm a nice guy, if I do things to you that you don't want?
Out of control.
Out of control?
Mad.
Frustrated. That you don't care.
That I don't care? Is that all?
Loss of trust.
Loss of trust. And trust is kind of important in this whole process, isn't it? Absolutely. And what's the context of my doing things to you that you don't want in terms of the eyes of our law?
It's wrong.
Well, it's not only wrong.
It's
assault and battery. So again, you and I have to constantly get consent from people, don't you? And we need to know what people want. How many times do you encounter clinical situations where the patient has lost capacity to be the decision maker and the family doesn't know, and you don't know, and now there's chaos? How many of you enjoy chaos, families out of control, tension, conflict? Who enjoys that? So it surprises me that we're not all motivated to absolutely make sure that our patients and the people in our society have thought about this. Because, of course, what does this lead to when we don't know? It leads to conflict, doesn't it? It leads to uncertainty. It leads to people who feel completely out of control, and families who are worried that they're either doing something to somebody or they're not doing what the person wants and they don't know. And specifically when it comes to life and death, boy, they don't like the idea of loss. They don't like the idea of stopping. So many times they continue to do things for people. But more and more, as we ask people, we're seeing that actually people don't want those things. More and more people are telling us, enough's enough. So I think this is the new wave for us to think about advanced care planning. So how many of you have a written power of attorney for healthcare done already? Three people in the room. Great. So who's going to be your decision maker when you can't decide for yourself? Are you going to fall back on the law in Ohio? So how many of you are married? So how many of you are going to be happy that your spouse is your decision maker? And how many of you are going not certain that you're happy that it's your spouse is the decision maker? Well, again, because there's the issue of loss of relationship here now, isn't there? And that can be quite profound. The idea of, oh my, I have to let go of my partner and I'm not prepared to do that. So how many of you actually have written directives or what we call a living will? Again, it's the same three people. So how are we going to know what you want? So, of course, what's likely going to happen is we're going to do everything, right? So how many of you are looking forward to enjoying being on a ventilator and us doing maybe two, maybe three resuscitations? So I see you saying no, but you haven't written it down. The question is, have you talked with family about your choices? So how many of you who haven't written it down have actually had a conversation with family about it? Aha, so we've got the basics are in place, aren't they? Great. So if you've not met Zdog MD, he does a lovely job of putting this together from a physician's perspective of what does it mean to not have an effective advanced care plan or no. And there we are at the bedside. So join me to watch Zdog MD as he says, "Ain't the way to die."
Just gonna stand there and watch me burn. End of life and all my wishes go unheard. They just prolong me and don't ask why. But it's not right, because this ain't the way to die. This ain't the way to die.
I can't tell you what I really want. You can only guess what it feels like. And right now it's a steel knife in my windpipe. I can't breathe, but you still fight, cause you can fight. Long as the wrong's done right, protocol's tight. High for drugs, trying to sedate. I'm like a pincushion, I hate it. The more I suffer, I suffocate. Right before I'm about to die, you resuscitate me. You think you've saved me, and I hate it. Wait, let me go, I'm leaving you. No, I ain't. Tube is out, you put it right back. Here we go again. It's so insane, cause though you think it's good, I'm so in pain. I'm more machine than man now, I'm Anna Kane. And no advanced directive, I feel so ashamed. And crap, who's that nurse? I don't even know a name. You lay hands on me to prolong my life again. I guess that you must think that this is living.
Just gonna stand there and watch me burn. End of life and all my wishes go unheard.
Zdog MD.
The way that I should die.
This ain't easy. Get the family.
You ever love somebody so much you can barely see when you're with them that they lay sick and dying, but you just don't want to let them be at peace, cause you miss them already, but they ain't gone. Beep, beep, the ventilator alarms. I swore I'd never harm them, never do nothing to hurt them. Hippocratic oath, primum non nosso re, now I'm forced just to torture them. They push full code, no one knows what his wishes were. His sister heard him say once,
I don't want to be a vegetable.
But no one agrees in the family. The caregiver, Kate, wants some comfort care, but Aunt Claire lives so far away. Batter guilt eats her like a cancer, so she answers, wait, I think he'll wake. Ma'am, you ain't even in the state. Palliate, relieve pain, get him home, explain. Critical care, just hypocritical when it's so insane. But they insist I shock his heart against a rough assist. I guess that's why they say that love is pain.
Just gonna stand there and watch me burn. End of life and all my wishes go unheard. It's my right to choose the way that I should die.
It always seems too soon until it's too late. Imagine that you have a catastrophic event in the next few days. What would be your story with your family? Kind of profound, isn't it? So, again, in the face of the success of modern medicine, and I know I've said this several times, people ask us to live the life they want to help them fix their disease, prevent and relieve suffering or not, but don't do the treatments they don't want. That's pretty universal. And we keep talking about negotiating goals for treatment. We've got to start talking about goals for life for these people. We're capacity builders, helping them have the life they want to have. Would you like me to help you in your situation to have the life? Or do you want me to subject you to multiple therapies and keep the therapy path going just for the sake of the therapy? Because, of course, you and I know that in the face of advanced illness, what's the success rate of cardiopulmonary resuscitation for patients who are elderly with advanced stage 4 cancers when they have a cardiac or respiratory arrest? What's the success rate?
Minimal.
It's not 1% to 2%. These people don't go home. That's, to me, the success story, isn't it? They go home. But these people don't go home. It's rare that somebody goes home. I actually have the Ohio Health data. I'll share it with you. Do you have the OSU success rate data from CPR? Great. Let's bring it to the table and talk about it. I think that'll be really important to see. And of course, we look at the frail elderly. They have a cardiopulmonary arrest. What's the chance of them going home? Now, you have VFib or VTAC right now. What's the success of you going home? It's better, isn't it? But it's not 40%. So that's what the technique is designed for, isn't it? It's for you and I, the reasonably well, who have a sudden catastrophic event. So why do we make it automatic? Because we've never had the conversations with people, have we? So we've decided, lower the risk, let's do it for everybody. But that means I may do things to you that you don't want. Sound threatening? Maybe. It's your choice. And of course, we've talked about the fact that people die sudden deaths, and that success rate, the chance that you're going to experience that is less than 10%. We've talked about the new profile of cancer and the fact that people decline and have dependence for 2 to 3 months, and we've looked at correlating the PPS data to that. We've seen the scales, and I think it's most important that you and I look at this data for ourselves, our families, and I start to now use this and walk patients through this. It's amazing when they see the data and they can see where they are. They say, oh no, I didn't know I was going there that quickly. It's very useful. And of course, we know the dependence is 2 to 3 months for these folks. And we've seen organ failure curves. We know that there are multiple crises, multiple hospitalizations. We have very high readmission rates in central Ohio, certainly Ohio Health. How about OSU? Very high. We're some of the highest readmission rates in the nation are right here in central Ohio. And now with Medicare, and these patients are in Medicare, saying if you have high readmission rates, we're going to take money back. There's clawback going on, and it's rising to 6%. Our hospital systems are starting to really pay attention because they're losing money, and neither of them like to lose money. That's what we've certainly seen. And, of course, there's dependence for months to years. We know people can live with a PPS of 20, 30, 40, 50% for long periods of time. Aren't you looking forward to this for yourself? I want you to start to imagine yourself in this story. So we go on to, of course, the prognosis and dementia story. And, of course, this we know goes on for years. And dependence, the need for care, it can go on for a long time. Are you looking forward to that for you? We know that the numbers are now rising. In America, 25% of the population die with 4 major diagnoses. More than 25% of the population die with dementia as one of the diagnoses. So you can look at it and say, well, that's not going to be me, but hey, the realities are we're doing so well at prolonging life that people are now getting into brain failure. Aren't you looking forward to this? Oh, it's exciting. No, think about this.
Well, I won't know the difference.
You won't know the difference. Well, that's certainly true, but... And we've seen the data, again, we're looking at dependence for years with people who have no mental function because they can't pass a mini mental status exam on any level. And they're now, if you look at FAST, incontinent, etc. So the question becomes, what do you want your illness experience to be? This is actually all about you, isn't it? It's not about them over there. It's all about you. Now, how many of you are generalists thinking about doing internal medicine, family medicine, or have been doing that? Again, there's several in the room. So again, how many of your families did you develop advanced care plans with?
Not as many as I should.
Well, how many? 5%, 10%, 25%, 50%?
Maybe
20. 20, yeah?
Probably in the teens.
In the teens. And again, one of my hypotheses is if you don't have an advanced care plan yourself, you'll never develop it for somebody else. And I think that's a huge issue here at Riverside. I bet it's true over at OSU. I'd love to do a survey within the hospital just to go through vertically through the whole building one day and find out what's the percent of the healthcare workers who have their own advanced care plan. I bet it's close to less than 10%. No surprise. So we have these four curves. Which curve are you looking forward to enjoying as your major diagnosis? Raise your hand once, please. Who's looking forward to organ failure as your story? You know, multiple rehospitalizations, intensive care unit, and sudden death. Who's looking forward to that for your personal story? Who's looking forward to the second curve, the dementia story? You know, the decline, dependence, need for care. Oh, gosh, family's burned out. Off you go to an extended care facility. Who's looking forward to that? Well, must be somebody wants to experience long-term care here in Central Ohio, no? What about the cancer story? First-line therapy, second-line therapy, third-line therapy. Gosh, if we're over at the James, they'll give us a phase one clinical trial, too, as we decline over 2 to 3 months. Who's looking forward to that story? Yeah, a couple of hands are going up. And how about the fourth story, living your life, gosh, myocardial infarction, quickly in, intubated, CPR, didn't work, death. Bad news, isn't it? Because less than 10% of you will get that story. Or death in your sleep. It's rare these days compared to all the others. So the question becomes, who will provide your care if you're curve number 1, 2, or 3? What do we know about caregiving in the United States, North America, the Western world? We know it falls on women. So how many of you in the room have a mother? Ladies, are you prepared to be your mother's caregiver? And what we know is we need 3 daughters. Do you have sisters? Which one of you will take on that task? And if this is months to years for your mother, will you be prepared to lose your future? The support study clearly shows us, even though people were well insured, 25% of the families had somebody who lost their career as a result. Who's prepared to lose their career, ladies, in order to look after the care for your mother, or will expand it to your father? So a couple people will. Okay, that's very important to know. But is that true in our society broadly? Not at all. And so then, if you're not prepared to do that, are you going to ship them off to an extended care facility? Or maybe we turn this around, how many children do you have? Are they going to ship you off to an extended care facility? What's the typical savings of a family in America at the time of retirement? Well, $20,000 in the bank account is the typical savings for retirement in America as people retire. And what does an ECF cost? Well, a good one costs a lot more than this. These are not good ones in Central Ohio. And 300 will take it as kind of the average, but it's not a great facility. If you want a great facility there, 400 to 500 a day. So what does that mean a month? If we take the 300 figure? So 9,000 a month. So what does that mean a year? $108,000 a year. And you've got to pay for clothing and other expenses. Who's got that in their bank accounts? And I know this to be real because my mother had dementia. I cared for her in my home She needed a caregiver 24/7, 365. We got a good rate at about $8,000 a month, although that was a few years ago. It did cost us $100,000 a year, and she was in our home with a full-time caregiver for 5.5 years. And the important piece, you can hear the $500,000 figure, can't you? I had this experience directly, and that was at the prime time when I was putting money into my retirement savings for myself, and I didn't have the cash to put it in. So this has a ripple effect as well. Are you looking forward to you personally being dependent? So that's the first step. You know the fast. We just get into the sixes and you're already incontinent of urine and stool, right? Now we move into the sevens. You can't utter more than a few words. Your mini mental status score is zero. And are you looking forward to being a burden? And the burden issue is not only the caregiving issue, but it's the cost, isn't it? And it's the fact that people are not doing what they would normally be doing. What do you think about that for you personally? Sounds awful, but it's the reality, isn't it? Just look at our society. What do you think about that for you personally? What do you think about that for you personally? I see lots of heads going, no, 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 no. But have we set the stage for this to work for us? Bankruptcy. It's on the docket. And of course, what happens if you need Medicaid? It's our security blanket, isn't it? You're allowed to have a house. You're allowed to have a car, you and your spouse, your partner. You're allowed to keep that until the second person dies. And then the estate takes it all. Every penny of the cost that went into Medicaid insurance for you. And boy, do they keep a tab. So your family will not get your property. The state will. The Medicaid is not a freebie. It comes with a burden. Somebody has to pay for health care in America, right? And as we look around the globe, this gets even more serious because, of course, there aren't even the security blankets. So what happens is the people that you would say, oh gosh, they need more care, they just don't get it. And families are sent home, patients are sent home with families, and the families are not provided with supports. That's the global reality. Is that what you want for you? Whew, it's kind of staggering, isn't it? And I paint this picture because it's real. And we're doing it even in America, aren't we? When we say people can't afford medications and they can't afford this, they have to go home. We don't have universal health care. So, of course, where would you like to receive your care when you're dependent? Who's looking forward to acute care here in Central Ohio? Who's looking forward to long-term care here in Central Ohio? Nobody. Nobody for either. Who's looking forward to being at home? And who's looking forward to being at home even though you are a burden and a high cost? Oops, not so many hands went up. My hand's still up. But I've also got lots of money in the bank set aside. I've been putting every penny I can into retirement. So it's the reality. What are some of the principles guiding decision making that can actually help us here as healthcare practitioners? So, first of all, we've accepted autonomy, haven't we? As a fundamental value here in North America. And what do I mean by autonomy? I have the right to determine my own future. I can accept or decline any single therapy. So as you think about the FAST scale, and we've read it as a group pretty much, if you haven't, I've given it to you today to have a look at. As you think about FAST, what's the level of FAST where you would say, I'm not sure I want that? Why don't we actually read it again and have a look at it? The microphone's right there. Harmon, would you start out reading number 5? And then we'll pass the microphone to the right and we'll go around the room.
Requires assistance in choosing proper clothing to wear for the day, season, or occasion. Example, patient may wear the same clothing repeatedly unless supervised.
6A, improperly putting on clothes without assistance or cueing. For example, may put on street clothes over night clothes, or put shoes in the wrong feet, or have difficulty buttoning clothing. occasionally or more frequently over the past few weeks.
6B, unable to bathe properly, for example, difficulty adjusting bath water temperature, occasionally or more frequently over the past weeks.
6C, inability to handle mechanics of toileting, example, forget to flush the toilet, does not wipe properly or properly dispose of toilet tissue, occasionally or more frequently over the past few weeks.
6D, urinary incontinence, occasionally or more frequently over the past weeks.
6E, fecal incontinence, occasionally or more frequently over the past weeks.
7A, ability to speak limited to approximately a half a dozen intelligible different words or fewer in the course of an average day or in the course of an intensive interview.
7B, speech ability is limited to the use of a single intelligible word in an average day or in the course of an intensive interview. The person may repeat the word over and over.
7C, ambulatory ability is lost. Cannot walk without personal assistance.
7D, cannot sit up without assistance. The individual will fall over if there are no lateral rests or on the chair.
7E, loss of ability to smile.
7F, loss of ability to hold up head independently.
So, as you think about this, how many of you are prepared to be 7C or greater? And would be happy to live life like that. Anybody? My gosh, nobody in the room. Okay, so let's move up the scale a little bit. Who would be prepared to be a 7A or greater? So 7A, B, or C. Anybody? Nobody. Wow, fascinating. So let's move up a little bit. How about a 6D, E? Who's prepared to be a 6D or E as you think about living your life? Nobody? How about a 6 A, B, or C? Who's prepared to live like that? There must be somebody in the room who's looking forward to some of these experiences, right? Who's, hands up, maybe, a little ambivalence, a couple people. Maybe. But I see most of you saying, I don't even want to be a 6. Wow, that's profound, isn't it? And of course, what we know is getting into 6, we're already into 9 plus years with this diagnosis. So at what point are you prepared to stop? Who's prepared to stop at a 5? A couple people at a 5. Who's prepared to stop at a 4? Gosh, some of you haven't put up your hands. What are you saying you want to be here? This is a reality, right? You get the diagnosis of dementia, and forward you go. And at what point on the scale do people with dementia lose capacity to be decision makers? I'm going to suggest, isn't it earlier than 4? Is it not a 3? And how many of our patients with dementia as a diagnosis walk in the door as a 3? A significant number actually arrive. They haven't even had the diagnosis and they're already a 3 because they don't come to the healthcare system quickly. What's the message here? Advanced care plans need to be done in family practice, in general internal medicine. They need to be done early, don't they? Because by the time somebody gets to being a 3, they can't change their advanced care plan. They can't change their power of attorney for health care. They can't change their will. They can't change their bank accounts. They're not able to sign for their finances. How many of you have a bank account with your partner or spouse that's an and? You both have to sign the checks. So it exists. You get these folks that say, well, we'll both just do this in joy and we'll have a good time, et cetera, and we're all together, right? Or maybe I don't quite trust them. So we're going to be an and. Well, that's a disaster, because, of course, as soon as you lose capacity to be a decision maker, the money's locked. So one of the tasks for us as healthcare practitioners is to make sure everybody has an or bank account before they lose capacity. So then the other person can sign and the money is not locked up. And if you've only got one bank account and you're in partnership, it's a disaster. You're sunk. So again, these are the things we need to help people with, and these need to be early. You and I as palliative medicine consultants need to make sure this is evolving. So it's really essential that we know if patients have capacity, don't we? So we've emphasized it again and again and again. And the basic criteria is the person needs to be able to describe their illness in their current situation. They need to be able to describe the consequences of accepting or declining a given therapy. And they need to demonstrate a thinking process. And they need to be able to express this to us. The criteria. You and I assess this every single day. This is not the role of a psychiatrist to do. You cannot proceed with even a blood draw without consent, because you're doing something to people. If they don't want it, they can decline. If they don't have capacity, somebody else needs to accept or decline for them. That's our reality. Is that not true? Of course, you don't want me to do things to you. You've already said that, right? So again, we need that decision maker. And of course, capacity is lost with change in mental status, delirium, dementia, and typically it's lost with cancer. It could be that it's not lost, but it could be days to weeks. Organ failure can be days, weeks, or months. I'm going to say dementia is in that stepping stone of anywhere from 2 to 3 to 4, depending on the individual. And of course, 100% of our dying patients lose capacity unless they die suddenly over those couple of minutes. 100% have lost capacity. So then somebody will make decisions for you, won't they? If you don't have capacity, who will that be? Have you written that down? Have you thought about that? Have you talked to that person? Very important step. That's the first step. What will guide your proxy decision maker, the person you appoint as your power of attorney for healthcare? Those become the tensions. So advanced care planning is a process, isn't it? We're going to talk about the what, the when, the how, and how to use it. It's a process to guide decision making about your health care if you do not have capacity to decide for yourself. It's very straightforward. It has two components. We appoint one or more proxy decision makers. They become our power of attorney for health care. This is different from your power of attorney for business affairs. You can have two separate people, but you need to put both documents in place in case you lose capacity, because if you have a single bank account or securities and suddenly you need access but you can't sign, you need somebody to be able to do that for you. Then advanced directives. What do you hope for in the face of illness? What type of life? What type of care? We often call this a living will. When to do it. I love ZDog MD's comment. It always seems too soon until it's too late. I think it's fabulous. It should become our motto as we talk to people. Yes, it feels stressful, but in fact what we see is as people actually put these in place, although the process is often stressful, even for healthcare workers, at the end they say, gosh, I really feel much better now knowing that's all done. Because of course, we're a society that really doesn't think about planning for our illness or our end-of-life experience. And of course, you can put it in place. Then as you get a new diagnosis, it's a trigger event to say, oh, I've done this, now let's review it. Is that what I still want? Hospitalization is another opportunity to say, do I want to make any changes? And any point in change in care needs is fine. Now, do I have to write this down? And the answer is no. The important part of this is having a conversation with people who will be your decision makers. What you do need to write down is if you don't want it to be the person who's in the law in Ohio, that closest to you and next to make decisions, you do need to write down somebody else, particularly if you're not in a married relationship or you don't want it to be your child, you don't want it to be your parent. That's the stepping stones, and we'll see those in a moment. You do need to write it down, but your directives, as long as people know what your directives are, you're going to be fine. It's a conversation between you, your family, your healthcare providers. We can capture the ideas on paper and include them in the medical record if we need to. We don't have to have a piece of paper. And we use it when you lack capacity to be a decision maker. The directives guide decision making for your power of attorney for healthcare. Ideally, you've also had the conversation with your family, because of course, your sister who lives in Massachusetts flies in, or your parent from sober flies in and says, oh my gosh, we can't be doing that for them. We've got to do something different. They can't die. And of course, what's the root issue here?
Emotions.
Sorry?
It's emotional.
It's emotions. And what's the real root issue is primary biological bonds. The mother-child, father-child bonds, the partner bonds, the child-to-parent bonds. My mummy can't die, my daddy can't die. I can't imagine life without them. Those are the primitive bonds that are at stake here in terms of the emotions. And the issue is, in the face of that, if you imagine your children, is your child, who may become your decision maker, going to be prepared to let you die? That's the real issue here. What do you think? This is the order by law in Ohio. Every state varies, so again, as you move to practice in another setting, you need to know the law and learn it. Also, the enactment of the Durable Power of Attorney for Healthcare in the context, the advanced directives changes. But if you have a guardian set, they trump everybody. Then we move to your spouse, your adult child, or the majority of available adult children. So you saw ZDog MD said, ma'am, you ain't even in the state. We don't have to pay attention to the person who ain't even in the state. We do, because we want to avoid family conflict later, and we know that if there's family conflict, it lives on for years amongst children, don't we? So we try to get them together, but it's the available children. We turn to parents, we turn to adult siblings, or the majority of those who are available. Or then we turn to the nearest adult not described above, who's related to thee by blood or adoption and available. You don't see friends in the list. If you want it to be a friend, if you want it to be a partner who doesn't have a biological bond, you better have it written down. Please.
If there's none of those available, is there means, and the patient doesn't have capacity, is there a means for designating a surrogate who's not related?
Well, then,
one through six are not.
Then we look towards creating a guardianship. We have to do that. So let's engage in this ourselves. I saw the majority of you do not have this, and those of you who do have it set, I'd love you to play along as well, because I think it's important for us to have a model of how to do this. So what I've given you is a kit that comes from a project called the Conversation Project that was developed by the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. I've looked at several different types of guides. I think this is the easiest and the simplest to guide people in. What I'd like you to do is walk with me through this. I'd like you to actually take a pen, and I want you to do this for yourself, walking step by step. Why Well, first of all, I think it's important that you have an advance directive and a proxy decision maker, or more than one. I actually have six proxy decision makers, and the statement is based on who's the closest to me at the time. Because, of course, many of you know I travel lots, and I want to make sure people around the globe have empowerment. They know who to turn to, each one of them, and they know what I want. So I've had that conversation with each. So what I'd like you to do is walk through step one, which is get ready, and you can read all the details a little bit later as you use the tool. I'd like you to complete step two, which is set, but leave the three most important things, which is on page six at the bottom, blank. Do not complete the three most important things. I'm going to give you a tool that may help us with that. So please spend a few minutes. Let's walk through and actually fill in step one, step two, right up to the bottom of page six. Okay? And I'd like you to do it for yourself. So I'd like you to actually complete the form. See what it feels like to actually write these things down. Okay, so let's press on with the next step. I'd like to move to the Go Wish game. This is a tool that was developed by a colleague of ours in California. She did a lovely job of putting it together, Dr. Betty Menken. The idea was, what are the most important choices people would make as the top things that they want to experience or have available to them as part of their end-of-life experience? So again, the top three priorities. What she did was a series of focus groups to ask people about the questions. She then did a validation study, and it's published, and I will give you those papers. There's two important papers that are part of the Go Wish experience. This is now available as a website. It is a card game, and I'm going to get you to play it right now. But you don't have to have the card game, the cards in front of you. You can actually play it online and have people do it if they want to do it in their own homes. It's available currently in English and validated, Spanish validated, Portuguese and validated is coming, and it's available in Chinese. So we can get those cards, and you can actually purchase these cards and make them available. So what I'd like you to do is, I'd like you to open up your card deck, and I'd like you to sort through the card deck, separate the instructions, because I'm going to walk you through the instructions, just set them on the side. And I would like you to go through your card deck and find a wild card that is there, and just set the wild card to the side. Okay, you've got your wild card set aside. So then what I'd like you to do is go through every one of the cards, and I'd like you to sort them into three piles. This is the most important for me. I must have this. This is somewhat important to me. And this is not or least important to me. So you're going to end up with three separate piles of cards. Please do that now. And this is your own personal choice and for yourself. So I'd like you to look at your wild card, and I'd like you to say, is there something that is not in my very important to me pile that I would hope would be there? And if there is, take the wild card and put it on that pile. If there is nothing, just set the wild card off to the side. So then what I'd like you to do is, I'd like you to set your somewhat important pile and your least important pile off to the side, as long as you have at least 10 cards in the most important pile. Okay, just set both of them off to the side. And then what I'd like you to do is go through your most important pile, and I'd like you to choose only 10 cards. If you have less than 10 cards, you can choose something from your somewhat important pile to include in the 10. But you can only have 10, including the wild card. So you must discard the others. And what's the reason for this? Well, we can't have a lot of choices, can we? And we need to tell people what's most important to us.
What if one of the cards is true and you don't anticipate it changing, but it's very important?
I'm not quite sure I understand what you mean.
To be at peace with God, for instance, is an example. I'm at peace with God. I don't see that changing.
Well, is it important that that be
it's
the case?
Important.
But then
I don't see it changing.
But you decide, because you're going to communicate these choices with your proxy decision maker, so you decide whether it's something that's most important to you or not. I understand what you're saying now.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have to decide whether it's something that you save or it's not something a part of what you're communicating. How's everybody doing? Bit more time? So you can only have 10. And the cards that you have left, just discard them and turn them over. They are gone. Including your wild card. If you haven't used it, it's gone. These choices are final. Okay, so everybody done? Got 10? Okay, just discard the rest. So what I'd like you to do now is I would like you to sort your remaining 10 cards, put the most important of the 10 on the top and the least important on the bottom. And as you sort them, think about how you will explain your choices and their importance to you, how you will explain them to your power of attorney for healthcare. Is this creating some emotion inside you? Some feelings? Does it create some feelings to imagine you can't have any of the other choices? Well, the reality is we kind of get our top three, don't we? So now what I'd like you to do is turn to the person beside you. So you're going to be number one, and you're going to be number two. You're going to be one and two, one, two, one, two, one, two, one, two, one, and two, if you'll play. And you're obviously together, so one and two. What I'd like you to do is turn to the person beside you. Number ones, you'll start. What I'd like you to do is share with the person beside you as though they were your proxy decision maker that you would hope for. So the first step is ask them, would you be my proxy decision maker? And the question has to be, would you respect my choices even though you don't necessarily agree with my choices personally? Very important question to ask. Because, of course, if they say, no, I wouldn't respect your choices, I'm going to make it mine, are you sure you want them to be your proxy decision maker? So that's the first step. Once they've agreed, then it's the I'd like to walk you through my top three choices, and I'd like to explain to you why they're my top three choices. So number one, will you take the lead and do that? And let's see how it feels. So, and as number one, you finished. Then change roles, and number two, you explain your choices. And ask the same questions. So can I ask you now to actually write your top three choices onto the conversation project page? Write your top three choices down. And if you wrote something else before, just cross it out and put your top three choices in. So how does it feel to actually be making these choices and recognizing you can't have the other 25 choices?
It's hard.
How does this whole process feel?
What I noticed is when I started going through the cards, I noticed I was putting a lot in the high priority.
So you start, first of all, everything's a priority, right?
so I realized, I got to start putting some things in the other pile.
Right, exactly.
There's a lot of things that, that's good.
Sure, well, we want it all, right? But the reality is, you and I know as healthcare workers, people don't get it all. So, but how does this feel?
It feels sad.
What do you mean by sad?
It almost makes you feel like you're dying.
It makes you feel like you're dying. Well, you are preparing for it.
But it caused me to feel like, gosh, I'm really preparing for the end.
You are really preparing for the end.
It's coming, but realistically and theoretically, you don't make a connection between the two.
That's right. We don't.
So, yeah.
So this is actually confronting the reality of your future.
Absolutely.
Yes, it is.
A sense of relief.
A sense of relief? Tell me about relief.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've talked about this with my wife and sister many different times. So now to have it written, I have it written down and say, here it is. And we've talked about it, but here it is.
So having it written down really makes a difference. You've talked about it with your sister and wife, mm-hmm. but here it is, actually. It is. That feels different.
I think it brings into, for me, it's brought into contrast, well, what's important, what's going to be important for me at that moment when I'm conscious and I'm dying, and what's important after I die, and kind of which ones take priority.
So what's important while you're dying, but also what's important after you die? That puts those two perspectives into play, doesn't it?
Made me realize, do I know what my husband's top three priorities are?
What made you wonder, what about your husband, right, and his top three priorities?
Yeah, but I don't know.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
Right, but you will be the decision maker right at the moment because you don't have this written down, right? And so what would you do if suddenly something catastrophic happened at noon today? But that's how it happens, right? I mean, look what happened in France yesterday afternoon. I mean, you know, 80 plus people dead and countless critically ill. People, suddenly, they're off at a celebration, at a party. Who knows? It's the motor vehicle accident out on 315 because somebody swerves because they were texting into you. So you don't know. I'm sorry, I'm blunt. The neuroscience tower is full of these people. It is. How does this feel?
I've done this a few times, and every time I get anxious.
Every time you get anxious, even though you've done it a few times.
Yeah, and I've talked about it, and it makes me anxious.
And why does it make you anxious, do you think? What's the root cause?
Because there's so much uncertainty with it.
So much uncertainty. Well, that's true. There is, isn't there?
And we're all control freaks.
And we're all control freaks. We are. Thank you for naming it.
My mind went to, like, the, well, what if this, what if this, but, like, this is machines. Well, what machines are you talking about? How long are we talking about machines? You know, if this changes, you know, I want, like, a playbook for, like, every scenario, but it's not possible.
No, it's not possible, is it? It's a conversation that's possible, yeah. But not a playbook. Mm-hmm. So
there's a wonderful article that we'll put in the Dropbox by Rebecca Sudor that talks about we can't think of every possible scenario that there might be, so how do we prepare our decision makers for the uncertainty?
So a wonderful article that we'll put in the Dropbox about how do we think about and deal with uncertainty. Yes?
I think something that's interesting, too, you know, looking at it now, I'm not married yet, I don't have children. How is this going to change in 15 years when I have teenagers and so on? How's it going to change when my parents are still in the picture and it shifts and I can foresee it shifting?
So how's it going to change as you get married, as you have children? Parents are in the picture, but maybe now they're not. And of course, who here changes their mind? We all do, don't we? So the whole point is, this is a conversation over time. It's the beauty of the tool and the package, because it invites you to come back to common choices and guide you. You don't have to make these choices. You could have other priorities, couldn't you? It's the wild card in the context of, it's only a game, but it's a tool to guide a conversation. Do you have a comment?
I think it's also important for me because I have a 9-year-old child. I'd rather be spending time, I mean, they also be spending time with me rather than thinking, do they pull the switch? Do they do, you know, does she want pain medication? So I have it written down so the burden of making a decision is off their head or shoulders.
So you want your 9-year-old to be spending time with you rather than caught up, and your husband, and rather than caught up in, oh my goodness, what do I do now?
And does it feel...
Husband's more emotional than you. Well, that's frequently the case, isn't it? And does it feel actually relieving to have written some of it down? Yeah, sure. Any other comments? So now that you've got it written down, what I'd like you to do when you have time, not now, is go on to step 3 and read it. And by that, what I'm hoping you'll do is read it this weekend. Now I'd like you to turn to the Healthcare Power of Attorney, the generic tool that's been developed by the state of Ohio. This is a process that's a consensus of several organizations leading us into that. They're all at the bottom of the tool. This is considered a legitimate document in the state. You don't have to use this document. It's a guide. And again, if somebody doesn't have a strong thought process, it just kind of gets them into it. I'd like you to open up the guide. It's got definitions, etc., but I'd like you to open and turn the page, and you will notice that it says, naming my agent. You're going to put your initials there, and I want you to write down the name of your agent and the relationship, the person you want to be your healthcare power of attorney. Please write it down. This is the step you would take to actually put this in place. So please put the person's name and put the initials in the box. You don't need to complete the rest of it at the moment. And I want you to think about the fact that you're actually creating a document that could be standing in the state of Ohio. You don't read it right now. Just put the name of the agent. You can read it over the weekend. Have you done that? So I'd like you to turn the page then, and you see on the page in front there's a series of definitions, lots of blah, blah, blah. Turn the page, and then what you will see is a series of generic directives. I'd like you not necessarily at the moment to read them, but take them home and read them. You have the option to accept all of them. You have the option to cross them out. You have the option at the bottom of the next page to additional instructions or limitations. What I'd like you to do is go through this. You've made these choices. Name your agent. Name alternate agents if you'd like to. Initial the box. And I'd like you to actually walk through this with your partner or durable power of attorney for healthcare this weekend. Will you do that? And the reason I want you to do that is I'm going to ask you on Monday how this felt. And if that person happens to be not available, but you have a second agent, walk through with a second agent. I'd like you to do this with somebody and let them know your choices. How does that feel?
This is updated from the last time.
It is. This is the new document. And you'll notice as you go on, there's actually a section about guardian. You can actually name somebody who might be your guardian if you're unable to be competent and we need to select a guardian. So they've given us that option in this document. I think that's a little much for people to do unless you're having an ongoing dialogue. It's certainly not step one in this process. Many people, as you noted in this room, don't even have step one done. They haven't appointed anybody, and they haven't written their directives down. Only 3 people in this room had, and you're the healthcare workers. How does the exercise feel?
Participating in this lecture makes me realize how culturally my family just doesn't talk about that.
So your family just doesn't talk about it. That's right. A cultural difference.
And my sister passed in October.
And your sister passed in October. Wow.
And so.
So you've been close to the experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And we just don't. So as I went through this, I had to really think about who would I ask.
It's very important for us to think about who to ask. Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Sure.
And,
so how does it feel for others in the room? Please.
Just my experience in the past couple weeks during the sortation, we've given this document to some of our patients in the hospital, and you know they have capacity by definition, but they don't really care about it. They don't really know what it is. They don't really want to know. They're like, we need you to do this to make it legal. Sign this. They don't look at it that close. They don't want to look at that closely. I'm not sure if I feel like comfortable with like, here's a piece of paper, here's a decision maker, go with it. I know it's right, but it's also like a little uncomfortable how legal documents sign like that. I wanted to just expand on that a little bit.
Sure. So you're saying it's uncomfortable to put a legal document in front of a patient who maybe aren't already in hospice care or palliative care, yeah. So they're already facing an advanced illness. I know this is uncomfortable for everybody. That's why it's not being done. As I've said, you don't actually have to complete the document. The most important thing is that you either agree with who's the durable power of attorney by healthcare by default in Ohio, and that's fine. So are you married?
No.
No. So it's your parents?
Brother.
Or brother? No, it's actually your parents.
Oh.
First is your parents. Yeah, so it's your parents. Are you happy that one of your parents will be your decision maker?
I've made my brother my decision maker.
Is it written down?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's fine. Then that makes your brother the decision maker. You show up with that as long as your brother knows what to do and how to make decisions. It's fine. I bet your brother will struggle. If you've written it down, the struggle by your brother is often less. And if they've got a piece of paper that says, because I see this all the time, oh my, we feel much better because here's the piece of paper. It says all these things. You're telling us this person has had a severe intracranial hemorrhage and won't recover. We're respecting that person's choices, and here they are. It turns out having it written down is so much easier for people. Being able to say the words, oh, my brother told me, because I'm going to ask, did you ever have a conversation with Andy about his choices? Yes, I did. What did he say? Saying the words at the moment rather than showing a piece of paper is much harder. Just understand how it feels to the decision maker not to be guided by a document. We've seen that time and time again. Is that your experience? As opposed to, oh yes, they wrote it down, I'm respecting their choices, I'm not happy with the choices, I'm having a terrible time because it's my brother and I don't want to lose my biological bond, but I'm respecting his choices and that trumps, and I do respect autonomy. You get the gist? Mm-hmm. But it's hard, isn't it? But so what you're saying is, as a healthcare worker, it's hard to present this to people, and it's actually the hardest when they're in crisis. And the worst place to have to do this is close to the edge of I have to have the decision. Oh, it's just terrible. And you just watch people in turmoil all the time. And it's hard for us, right? Because, of course, we don't like the turmoil that's going on. Who enjoys the turmoil of the chaos of the family that's having a terrible time decision-making, and now we're at the fourth family meeting in order to try to get them to make decisions, and they're inching their way there, but they're just uncertain, and they go a little bit, and they pull back again, and they say, oh, no, we'll tell you in a few days. And so what we're watching is the person who's getting care that we kind of have the impression is not helping the person, because we're being extra aggressive. They're not going to survive this experience, but we're carrying on doing it to them. How does that feel? Doesn't feel good, does it? So there's these mix of tensions. This is designed to reduce that interface.
Can you address MOLST?
So MOLST and PULSED are two different documents, which are kind of generic approaches to this on a very high level. And in fact, what is it? PULSED is being passed here in Ohio as a mandatory. It's basically, you know, put down the real basics on paper. And it's being passed as a mandatory. Every practitioner is going to have to do it with their patients. That's the law. So again, what we see is, although we may feel uncomfortable, and thanks for your comment, because it's everybody does, you're just speaking for us, it's actually because the public is saying we want to have our choices known, and that's a large group of public, we're getting mandated papers and documents to do. And of course, what's the physician-assisted suicide movement all about? Now legal in 5 states. Enacted in 5 states.
To allow death with dignity.
Sorry?
To permit death with dignity.
Well, what's it all really all about?
Control.
I get to decide when I'm going to die. Mm-hmm. It's not even the treatment. It's the I'm going to get to decide when I want to die. Well, that's a huge movement on the part of public, and it's been thwarted by physicians all over the place. Because, of course, guess what? We're the ones that help enact it. That feels very uncomfortable, doesn't it? So do you want to have a PAS, physician-assisted suicide, come to Ohio? Or would you like to be actively engaged in advanced care planning? Advanced care planning. Who would vote for advanced care planning? As opposed to what's happening in Canada, where it's going countrywide, is if a patient requests you to help them with physician-assisted suicide, the initial response was, you have to participate. And it was the initial response of some of the colleges in the country. And of course, the physicians pushed back hugely. So it's changing, but you can feel where the public is pushing us to. Well, thank you for participating. Will you take my charge, my call to action? Will 100% of you have a conversation with your first power of attorney or second power of attorney this weekend? And will you come back with the paperwork filled in on Monday? Will you take my charge? And then we'll ask you on Monday, what does this feel like? You know, I believe what ZDOG MD says is fabulous. It always seems too soon until it's too late. And you and I get to watch the too late all the time, and the struggles and the crisis and the families torn apart by decision making, as opposed to you and I also get to witness what happens when somebody walks in and they said, we had this conversation, we know it's catastrophic, we're here to respect their choices, and here's the person's choices. Doesn't it feel good for the family? And doesn't it feel good for us? To me, this is the next wave in the success of modern medicine, is people get to empower themselves and recognize it is about quality of life, and it is about saying, if I get to six, but most of you said three or four, right? Oh, I was impressed. Most of you said three or four. Are you going to write down no antibiotics for the urinary tract infection or the upper respiratory tract infection? Are you going to write that down? Because if you get there, I mean, I'm talking about this for you personally, because if you get there, of course, those are the things that are catastrophic for these folks, aren't they? It's a UTI or it's a pneumonia. If you write down no antibiotics, that empowers us to make sure you don't get to being the six or the seven that you said, I don't want to be. I hope it's been helpful. I look forward to your ongoing comments about what I think is an evocative topic, and I think we should make it a project as a team to survey both hospitals and find out how many people really have advanced care plans amongst the professionals in our healthcare facilities. Will you join me in that? It's a great research project. And then, of course, we could then roll out this kind of a program and get people to put them in place. Thanks. Have a great day. Thanks for the discussion. Thanks again for tuning in. I hope you'll rate and review this podcast and share it with your colleagues and your friends. So you don't miss any of our new content, make sure you are subscribing to PCIC Podcasts. PCIC is sponsored by PalMed, where our aim is to advance palliative care globally and ensure all clinicians have the latest knowledge and skill. To access more PCIC content, please visit palmed.us to review our extensive open access PCIC curriculum.